It's now late February of 2022, and the big news about COVID this week is that society is turning its attention away from it. And if the disease continues to decline, maybe that's expected. And I myself am planning to cover some broader topics in the next couple of weeks, including the breakdown of civility among scientists and the troubled relationship between experts and the general public. But I really wanted to share this recent interview I did with immunologist Dan Baruch. He's not someone you'll see much on TV, and you won't see him opining on Twitter. He is way too busy in the lab studying ways to improve our vaccines and looking at how new variants are getting around protection, both from natural infection and our current vaccines. That's what's in store for today's episode of Follow the Science. I'm your host, Faye Flam. I'm a science journalist and a Bloomberg opinion columnist. And this podcast grew out of a fellowship from the Society for Professional Journalists. My guest, again, is Dan Baruch. His official title is Director of the Center for Virology and Vaccine Research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, and he's also associated with Harvard Medical School. He led the design of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and he's been the lead author of a whole stream of published papers throughout the pandemic, many of them on the interaction of the virus with our immune systems. We start our conversation by talking about the concept of natural immunity, which has been tied up with the contentious issue of vaccine mandates and the question of whether people who've had COVID need to be vaccinated. There is a lot of interest right now in so-called natural immunity, how it stacks up with vaccines, and what our policy should be, whether it's letting people who've had COVID get fewer shots, maybe letting having an infection count as one shot. And I saw that you did one such study looking at BA2, which is likely to be our next dominant variant. So I was hoping you could talk about what we know about that.
Sure. Well, I can tell you about our study. It only partially addresses your question, but there's obviously many other studies addressing your question perhaps a bit more directly. So I can tell you about our study, and then I can provide some opinions about the broader question you're asking, if that would be useful.
Yeah, that'd be very useful.
One of the earliest studies on natural immunity was actually our study that we published in, I think it was May of 2020, in the rhesus macaque model, in which we showed experimentally that natural immunity could provide substantial protection against an experimental re-challenge in macaques. And that was quite an important study at the time, because at that time, spring 2020, then it really wasn't clear whether or not there was natural immunity to coronaviruses in humans. So that is actually one of the very first studies, and that did come from our lab. It was in an animal model, but I think it's really held up for human data. Now, early on in the vaccine field, or in the vaccine development phase, it was noted that the early immune responses, the early antibody titers following vaccination, particularly mRNA vaccination, were a lot higher than natural immunity. And so it gave rise to the perspective, at least at that time, that vaccination was much better than natural immunity.
Well, that helps explain why scientists initially thought that the vaccines would be even more powerful than getting the infection in terms of protection from future infection. And as I learned in episode 55 from immunologist Shiv Pillai, the virus sometimes interferes with your body's immune response, and that's to the virus's advantage. But then scientists observed something that started to change their minds. That is, the antibodies from the vaccines waned pretty quickly, or as Dan Baruch puts it, the antibody titers waned.
But there's obviously been developments in the vaccine field, such as showing that those titers don't last. They actually decline quite quickly and quite sharply. And so I think it's become a little bit more nuanced. I don't think that it's a I don't think there's a clear statement that vaccination is necessarily always better than natural infection, particularly since natural infection would give you broader immunity to different antigens, probably more T cell responses, et cetera. And now there is clear evidence that natural immunity does provide a substantial degree of protection against infection in humans, particularly against severe disease. And I saw there are some recent studies that are just quantifying that, actually. And it is also clear that natural immunity provides a lot less protection against the Omicron variant than it did against the Alpha and Delta variants, for example. So just like the Omicron variant can evade vaccine-induced antibodies, the Omicron variant can also evade natural immunity-induced antibodies.
That's interesting. And I wonder if we're sort of talking about natural immunity to a Delta infection as opposed to natural immunity to an Omicron infection.
That's correct. Yeah. So natural immunity to Omicron infection raises high titers of Omicron antibodies and lower titers of Delta antibodies, for example.
Well, I think that's good to know. It clarifies something. So at least if you get Omicron, you're going to be pretty well protected against getting another Omicron infection, at least for a while. And that may explain why cases have been going down so fast in the United States in January and February. But quantifying natural immunity gets pretty complicated because it depends on which variant of the virus you were infected with and which variant you need to be protected from, which variant is in circulation at the time.
When I'm referring to natural immunity, I'm specifically referring to natural immunity induced by the original Washington strain, Alpha or Delta, and the fact that it provides good immunity against those strains and much lower immunity against Omicron, for example.
Now, I remember reading about some of the early studies when Omicron was new. And if I remember right, the people that did the best were ones who had natural immunity and got vaccinated, that those people had the best protection. Next best was vaccinated, double vaccinated, and then below that was people that had been infected.
Yeah, so it's also clear that people who've been vaccinated, who then get a subsequent infection, develop very robust high titers and cross-reactive antibodies and T cells. And that's shown in many papers, including in our study from the outbreak in Provincetown, which is out on preprint and very soon to be out in the peer-reviewed literature. But that's seen in many other studies as well. So if you're vaccinated and then get infected, or if you're infected and then get vaccinated, then you actually have very high immunity. Typically, that's higher than what can be achieved with vaccination alone. Now, I'm not saying that people should go out and get infected. Quite the opposite, because we don't want people...
The protection is against getting infected, so it seems like it would be fairly counterproductive. And now we get to the current threat, that is this sublineage BA2, and it turns out Dan Baruch is the author of a paper examining how well it gets around our immunity. And this is a key question because most of us have some kind of immunity by now, either from getting infected or being vaccinated or some combination of both. So the latest thinking is that Omicron has actually split into multiple lineages. BA1 is the one that has been called Omicron. At least it's responsible for most of the infections in the United States. But there's also BA2, which has been responsible for some of the infections in European countries. And it seems to be acting a little like a new variant altogether because it also has a lot of unique mutations. And for reasons nobody really understands, BA2 has grown pretty big in Denmark and a couple of other countries, but here in the United States, it's here, but it's just lurking as a tiny fraction of cases. It hasn't blown up into a new wave so far. And that may, it turns out, have to do with the fact that so many people here got BA1, and the immunity from that protects them pretty well against BA2.
So our recent study on BA2, the main purpose of that brief paper was really to show that BA2 behaves similarly to BA1. Omicron BA2 is similar to Omicron BA1 in terms of its immune evasiveness. It's slightly worse, but not a ton worse. So I think we estimated that neutralizing antibody titers were about 1.3 to 1.4 fold lower, not 10 fold lower, not 20 fold lower, just 1.3, 1.4 fold lower to BA2 than BA1. So it's similar to BA1, evades immunity very slightly more than BA1, but not a ton more. And so we concluded in the paper that the inroads that BA2 has made in some regions of the world in the setting of an Omicron BA1 surge is likely more due to the increased transmissibility rather than the increased immune escape conferred by BA2. Now, in the study, we also looked at a small cohort of people who were vaccinated and then infected with Omicron, BA1. And those people raised high neutralizing antibody titers really across the board to the original Washington strain, as well as BA1 and BA2. So that was our study. We didn't, that study wasn't specifically comparing infected versus vaccinated individuals, because most of the infected individuals we had been vaccinated, just because that's the population that we see in Massachusetts most commonly.
And how are those experiments done?
So it's just taking a blood sample from volunteers who wish to participate, and then serum from the blood is put onto antibody assays to look at antibodies against Omicron BA1, BA2, or other strains.
Okay, interesting. And, you know, I wanted to just back up something you said at the beginning about that May 2020 paper. Wasn't it sort of important to look at natural immunity to get a sense of how well a vaccine might work, whether this was the type of a disease that could be fought with a vaccine?
Absolutely. So it historically, vaccine development has been much more successful for viruses for which there is natural immunity. For example, influenza, measles, mumps, rubella. And on the other side, viruses for which there is no natural immunity, such as HIV, vaccine development has typically not been successful for. So we did the study in May 2020, not so much to test natural immunity, but really as part of our vaccine program, because we wanted to know as quickly as possible whether a primate host, in this case macaques, could develop natural immunity. And when we saw that there was substantial natural immunity, then I think I was quoted in the New York Times saying that this is very good news for about 7 billion people worldwide. And we wanted to get those data out as quickly as possible. And I think our study was, I don't know if it was the first, or it was certainly one of the earliest studies to demonstrate natural immunity in any model. And we thought it had very important implications for all the vaccine programs throughout the world, suggesting that all the vaccine programs would work because natural immunity was so robust. Now, I think that a lot of the early perceptions of vaccines were really amplified by the fact that the very early immune responses, the very early antibody titers, are extraordinarily high. But those do decline very quickly over time, which was not known until later. And so there was an early perception that vaccination is sort of hands down better than natural infection. I think a lot of people still feel that way, and it might turn out to be that's the case. But I think it's more nuanced now. And I think a lot of people really feel that natural immunity gives you some level of protection, a substantial degree of protection against infection, and even higher level of protection against severe disease. So the question is, how does natural infections stack up to vaccination, and do you need fewer shots? It's not completely clear, but in my mind, I generally think of natural infection as one shot of a vaccine, very broadly speaking. So I don't think that one episode of natural infection is adequate, say, to protect against Omicron, but I think that natural infection is appears to be roughly approximate to one vaccine shot.
That has kind of been the consensus view that I've heard, or at least a sort of middle ground view.
But that's more in terms of immune responses. That's not really in terms of, I don't know, protection data. And certainly I'm not a policy making. So I'm not suggesting that from a policy perspective. I'm saying, as an immunologist, the immune responses to, say, an infection plus one shot of a vaccine looks similar to what I see with two shots of a vaccine in someone not infected, for example.
Now I steer the conversation back to BA2 because it's something that is causing a lot of people a lot of concern.
So the Omicron lineage splits into BA1, BA2, and BA3. What we used to call Omicron is really Omicron BA1. And so it's not even new, but the later taking off lineage is the BA2 lineage of Omicron.
From what I've heard, it's quite different. So it has a lot of mutations and might not be, you know, that similar to Omicron. So you might get BA1 and then get BA2.
Well, that's, you know, brings us back to our earlier discussion about our paper, in which we do show that there is substantial cross-reactive antibodies between BA1 and BA2.
That's good.
And a lot of, you know, people who were infected with BA1 also develop high levels of antibodies against BA2, only about 1.3, 1.4-fold less. So that would suggest that people who are infected with Omicron BA1 do have substantial protection against Omicron BA2 and vice versa.
Okay. So looking into the future then, is the next step going to be a vaccine that will protect us against a wider variety of possible new variants? So maybe something that looks at what's been conserved across these different variants?
Well, I think that there's a lot of interest in that. Those are still research fields, and we are actually very much involved in that research field. But that research field is still a research field. So I don't think that there's any immediate products on the horizon for human use. But there's a lot of research moving in that direction. Because what we're doing now is what I call retrospective variant chasing, which means that a new variant emerges, it causes a global concern, and then the vaccine manufacturers start to make vaccines against the new variant. And by the time those vaccines become available, even with the fastest available technologies, then the variant is largely gone. That happened with the Beta variant. That happened with the Delta variant, although that was a little bit different because that was because the previous vaccines were highly cross-reactive. And that might be happening with the Omicron variant. You know, we'll see. As you probably know, the case counts for Omicron are way, way down. And it's not clear how much further they're going to go down or whether there might be a resurgence with BA2 or not. But certainly, the vaccines are not imminently available. It still will be a little while, the Omicron vaccines. And the case counts are going down sharply. So whether there's going to be much Omicron left by the time the vaccines become available, it's not yet clear.
Do you see the possibility of a nasal vaccine that would maybe be better at warding off infection in the first place and then possibly helping us keep the cases really low or get rid of it?
It's a very interesting research field. So there are nasal vaccines that are in clinical trials. I would say none of them are a slam dunk, but will generate useful data, and we shall see. But it's not something that's imminently on the horizon, but there are studies being conducted. And so if there is something promising, then I'm sure we'll all hear about it.
I think there's a lot of concern out there that because a lot of the mandates are being lifted, that the scientific community is giving up on COVID. And I'd hate to see that happen. I'd like to see a lot of funding for people like you to keep at it. What do you see going on in the scientific community? Do you think the funding agents are going to give up on COVID, or are people like you going to be able to keep working on this for the indefinite future?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that comment. I think there still will be substantial resources to do research on COVID. Will it be the same as during the acute phase of the pandemic? Well, of course not, because there's going to be many, you know, we still need to have funding for heart disease and cancer and other infectious diseases. But I do think that the threat of COVID resurgences and the threat of another coronavirus pandemic are very real. And I don't see funding bodies giving up on COVID. I don't see scientists giving up on COVID. I think that there is substantial interest in the funding and scientific and medical communities to understand that this issue, we might be seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but we're not out of the tunnel. And you know, to be honest, we thought we saw the light at the end of the tunnel several times before, and then you know, there were further complications.
There seems to be a lot of anxiety floating around right now that society is giving up on COVID because people all over the world are dropping a lot of the so-called non-pharmaceutical interventions and restrictions that we've been living with for the last 2 years, and yet the virus is still here. But it's important for the scientific community not to give up, and I'm glad they're not. I think this is a two-way battle. The virus keeps evolving to evade our immunity, and we're going to have to keep developing better systems for surveillance, better prevention strategies, better treatments, and possibly an upgraded vaccine. It isn't exactly a battle that anyone wins. Humans aren't going to go extinct because of SARS-CoV-2, and it may be that the virus is never going to go extinct either, at least not until we develop something much more advanced than our current vaccines. But we humans can decide how much collateral damage we're likely to suffer.
Thank you for listening to Follow the Science. Follow the Science is produced by Faye Flam. You can follow Faye on Twitter @FayeFlam. That is FayeFlam. Today's episode was edited by Seth Glicksman, with music by Kyle Imperator. If you liked today's episode, we'd really love it if you left us a positive rating and review wherever you listened. Thanks in advance, and we'll see you next week.